Good morning, everyone. The takeaway this morning takes us to London. And first of all, welcome back, Celeste Headlee.
Thank you very much. Sounds like you're better? Also getting a little stuffed
up. No, you know, it's a germ city right around here.
Well, the change of the seasons is always hard on the body.
Exactly right. But here's what seems to me to be very much a ritual since the early 90s. I mean, since the first Gulf War back in, the very early 90s, when the U.S. acts in the Middle East militarily,
right,
and a coalition follows, it's the British military that's almost always first in line.
That's true.
I mean, the U.S. and Britain have shared strategic interest in casualties in virtually all the conflicts ever since. I mean, I think you can go to Kosovo, certainly the war in Iraq, and now
Absolutely.
The war in Afghanistan. But a story this week posed some pretty interesting questions. The British Defense Ministry announced it was about to make some severe budget cuts, and some U.S. military planners saw this as a clear sign that the Brits simply might not be willing or able to come along on Washington's next military adventure. Well, so what? I mean, on the one hand, have we grown militarily dependent on London in the world? That seems
odd, and yet
odd. I mean, the British military is about the size of the U.S. Marine Corps.
But there's other things involved in military decisions, apart from military prowess, technical prowess.
Well, perhaps we've grown to rely on the British to give us some kind of political cover for
That's
military operations,
accurate.
To give us this sense of coalition. Conversely, have the British relied on U.S. military power to maintain their profile on the world stage over other European powers, like, say, France, Italy, or even Poland, which is a big presence in Afghanistan and Iraq? John Burns is the London bureau chief for our partner, The New York Times. We welcome him back once again. Good morning, John.
Good morning.
Also on the line is the retired Colonel Peter Mansour, who served as an executive officer to General David Petraeus in Iraq. He teaches military history at The Ohio State University. Colonel, good morning.
Good morning.
All right, John Burns, to begin with, the U.S.-British alliance, is it an alliance of military prowess or more a mutual political cover?
I think it's both. I think it would have been a mistake, and I'm sure Colonel Mansour would agree with this, to underestimate the importance of the British military contribution. When I was doing that once, or General Petraeus thought I was, he rather quickly corrected me and made a specific reference to the importance of British special forces in Iraq and now in Afghanistan. But there's no denying that the political cover is extremely important as well.
But Colonel Mansour, then the suggestion there is that if the U.S. would not do something unilaterally without British support or this coalition cover that we're talking about, and I'm coining the word, that's not anything I'm getting from anywhere else, then perhaps having the British alliance there removes some constraints that might be in place otherwise for getting involved in military adventures. And conversely, the Brits might not get involved in these conflict zones if they didn't have the U.S. to rely on as the much bigger partner. Colonel Mansour?
Well, in my study of history, I think that we make better strategy when we actually have to argue it with an alliance partner. It seems sort of nonsensical, but when you actually have an alliance and you have to argue your goals and your strategic objectives with an alliance partner, you usually come out better in the end. And by removing that break, it could lead the United States down a path it doesn't want to go down in the future.
How is the London press handling these budget cut stories that emerged this week? Military planners very, very worried that the capability of the British military is going to change significantly. What's the coverage been like, John Burns?
Well, the big story of this week has been the leaked letter that the British Defense Secretary, Dr. Liam Fox, wrote to Prime Minister Cameron, expressing a private letter, expressing his opposition and unwillingness to accept and he used the word draconian cuts that are proposed to be announced on the 20th of October in the defense budget. He didn't say so, but the heavy implication was that he might resign unless those cuts were rescinded or at least attenuated. So we'll have to see how that goes. And you made a very important point here, which is one that Mr. Cameron, the Prime Minister, shortly before he became Prime Minister, made to me, which was that from the British point of view, this American military alliance, the close relationship with the United States, is, as he put it to me, Cameron put it to me, allows us, Britain, to punch above our weight. So there's a lot invested in this relationship, and a lot invested in striking the right balance and making these defense cuts while retaining a credible posture as an American ally.
So the suggestion there from John Burns, the London bureau chief for our partner, the New York Times, is that Britain possibly can't afford to punch above its weight. But there's also been criticism, Colonel Peter Mansour, among British kind of investigations of the Iraq conflict, that the Brits did not question, did not engage in this debate over strategy as vigorously as they might have, and so made some mistakes or had casualties that they could have avoided otherwise. What's your view of that?
Actually, I would agree with that criticism, and they failed to do so to the detriment of both sides. Had perhaps they argued more vociferously for their strategic outlook, we wouldn't have made so many mistakes in Iraq, or maybe not even gone in the first place. But, you know, I would really agree with what the Prime Minister said. The special relationship allows Britain to have an influence in the world that it wouldn't otherwise have. But if it doesn't bring anything to the table, then what's so special about the relationship?
Well, let's talk, John Burns, about what Britain does bring to the table. There was some discussion that having to have this discussion with a partner like Britain can force the United States to think more carefully about military decisions, or perhaps make more of a case before it makes military decisions. Is that true?
I think that's true, and I think that in rather special ways, although the British military contribution in Iraq in terms of numbers was not, after the initial invasion phase, very important, and although the British military operations around Basra ended in miserable failure, which is, by the way, now acknowledged here, I think the British did bring something to the table, a part of which was, ironically, their colonial experience of 200 years or more of military adventures, not always successful, in places that included Iraq, which allowed them to come to the table with some knowledge of the things that would work and that wouldn't work. And General Petraeus always gave great credit to a British general, Graham Lamb, for what we came to know as the awakening, the crucial decision made by tribal leaders and some insurgent groups to switch sides in the Iraq war at the time of the surge.
Sure.
And that the British contribution there was partly based on their own experience and history.
All right, John Burns, London bureau chief for our partner, the New York Times. We're going to say goodbye to him. We're going to continue with retired Colonel Peter Mansour, who served as executive officer to General David Petraeus in Iraq, and talk about that situation John Burns referred to in Basra, which came apart so terribly 3 years ago. Stay with us.